From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, distinguished delegates, ambassadors, and world leaders, 7 decades of history have passed through this hall in all of their richness and drama.
U.S. President Donald Trump opened the 74th session of the U.N. General Assembly's general debate on Tuesday.
The world has heard from presidents and premiers at the height of the Cold War. We have seen the foundation of nations. We have seen the ringleaders of revolution. We have beheld saints who inspired us with hope, rebels who stirred us with passion, and heroes who emboldened us with courage, all here to share plans, proposals, visions, and ideas on the world's biggest stage.
One speaker with a vision is President Evo Morales, president of the plurinational state of Bolivia. He spoke on Tuesday, and we bring you his speech in its entirety, and then we'll come back and have a conversation with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. This was Bolivia's President Evo Morales at the UN in New York City Tuesday.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. I'd like to extend my greetings to my brother, President of the General Assembly of the United Nations, Tijani Mohamed Bande, and brother Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres. Brothers and sisters, presidents, chancellors, delegates, brothers and sisters, international organizations, and all the peoples of the world. Once again, we meet in this multilateral organization, which is the most important organization of mankind, in order to reflect and to collectively analyze global problems which are a concern for our peoples. We observe with concern that the multilateral system is deteriorating as a result of unilateral measures taken by some states. States that have decided to ignore commitments, good faith, and global structures that were built in order for states to live healthily with each other in the context of international law and based on the basic principles of the United Nations Charter. We meet in this forum to debate and to seek solutions to the great and serious threats to mankind and life on this planet. Our house, Mother Earth, is our only home, and it is irreplaceable. Increasingly, it is suffering from more fires, more floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, droughts, and other disasters. Every year is hotter than the one before. More ice is melting. Sea level is increasing, and every day we see the disappearance of species suffer from land erosion, desertification, and deforestation. Brothers and sisters, we stand warned that if we continue on this path, by the year 2100, we will have reached a point where there is a 3-degree centigrade increase in temperature, which will lead to devastating and massive changes. The consequences of climate change will, according to data of this very organization, condemn millions of people to poverty, to hunger, to no access to drinking water. They will lose their homes. Forced displacements will take place. More refugee crises and more armed conflicts will take place. Brothers and sisters, in recent weeks, We have been surprised by forest fires that have broken out in various places around the planet. These fires have been unleashed in the Amazon and Oceania and Africa, and they impact the flora, the fauna, and biodiversity as a whole. In recent weeks in Bolivia, we have also seen focal points for heat, and we are fighting these fires using our financial, technical, and human resources. To date, our country has spent more than $15 million in order to put out the fires. We thank the international community for its timely cooperation in helping us to struggle against the fire, and we thank the international community for its commitment to participate in post-fire action. Brothers and sisters, and peoples of the world, the arms race, military spending, technology used in the service of death, unscrupulous arms trade, all have been on the rise. The financial system continues to be anti-democratic, inequitable, and unstable. The system continues to privilege tax havens and banking secrecy, forcing the weaker countries to accept conditions that only perpetuate their dependency. We observe with sadness that the huge social asymmetries continue to exist. According to Oxfam information, currently 1.3 billion people live in poverty, whereas 1% of the wealthiest on the planet hold 82% of world wealth in the year 2017. Inequality, hunger, poverty, the migratory crisis, epidemics of disease, unemployment, these are not just local problems, these are global problems. Moreover, humanity's creative capacity astonishes us on a daily basis with new inventions and new technology applications. These same technologies offer us fabulous solutions to complex problems. Technology has provided a qualitative leap forward for mankind, and yet it is necessary that in this multilateral body we establish agreements in order to provide for the participation of all states. Brothers and sisters, it is unavoidable to talk about the structural causes of the various crises. Transnational corporations control food, they control water, they control non-renewable resources, arms, and technology. These corporations control our personal data and are trying to turn everything into a business in order to accumulate more capital. The world is controlled by a global oligarchy where a handful of multimillionaires define the political destiny of mankind and economic destiny. 26 people have the same amount of wealth as 3.8 billion people. This is an insult. It's immoral, and it's unacceptable. The problem ultimately lies in the model of production and consumption, in ownership of natural resources, and the inequitable distribution of wealth. Let us speak plainly, and let us speak clearly. The root of the problem lies in capitalism, the capitalist system. And this is why the United Nations are more relevant and important than ever, despite individual efforts to undermine it, which these efforts have been insufficient. And it's only through joint action that we will be able to have an opportunity to overcome those efforts. As we said before, Our responsibility to the next generation is to deliver to the following generation a world which is more fair and more human. And this can only be achieved if we work together to consolidate a multipolar world based on common rules and by defending multilateralism, by defending the principles and purpose enshrined in the United Nations Charter, and by defending international law.
Manos.
Brothers, sisters, in Bolivia we have taken very important steps. We are the country with the highest economic growth in South America, with an average growth of 4.9% over the past 6 years. Between 2005 and 2019, the gross domestic product increased from 9.5 billion to over $40 billion. We have the lowest unemployment of the region. Unemployment fell from 8.1% in 2005 to 4.2% in 2018. Extreme poverty fell from 38.2% to 15.2% in 13 years. Life expectancy has increased over the past 9 years. Minimum wages increased from $60 to $310. The gender gap has been reduced, as well as land ownership by women has increased. 138,788 women received lands from 2005. Well, in 2005, it was 138,000. By 2018, it was over 1 million. Bolivia is the third country in the world with the largest participation of women in its parliament. Over 50% of members of parliament are women. Bolivia has declared itself free of illiteracy in 2008. The school dropout rate fell from 4.5% to 1.5% between 2005 and 2018. The infant mortality rate was reduced by 56%. We are in a process of implementing a system of universal health care, which will guarantee that 100% of all Bolivians have access to free health care with dignity, quality, and humanity. We enacted a law for free care, free medical care for cancer patients. The statistics I mentioned are part of the achievements of our democratic and cultural revolution that has given Bolivia political, economic, and social stability. Brothers and sisters, how have we managed to achieve so much in such a short period of time? How has Bolivia managed to take the path towards defeating poverty and underdevelopment? Well, thanks to the mindfulness of our people, of the indigenous social movements, of movements of farmers, of workers, of professionals, of men and women living in rural areas and in cities. We have nationalized our natural resources and our strategic businesses, taking control of our destiny. We have built a community-based socioeconomic model that is also productive and that acknowledges that basic services are a human right. Today, we can say with pride and optimism that Bolivia can look forward to its future. Brothers and sisters, there is a topic that is pending in the region, that is the sea, access to the sea. The sea is essential for life, for integration, and for the development of nations. This is why Bolivia will never renounce its right to have sovereign access to the Pacific Ocean. In 2015 and 2018, the International Court of Justice in The Hague, in its decisions, stated its position on the following elements. First of all, in paragraph 19 of the decision of the 1st of October 2018, it established that, quote-unquote, Bolivia had a coastline of 400 kilometers along the Pacific Ocean, end of quote. Secondly, in paragraph 50 of the decision of the 24th of September of 2015, it decided that matters under dispute are not matters that are, quote unquote, resolved by arrangement of the parties or by arbitration or by decision of an international tribunal or regulated by agreements or treaties currently in force, end of quote. Thirdly, in paragraph 176 of the decision of the 1st of October of 2018, the court established that, quote, nonetheless, the conclusion of the court should not be understood as an impediment to the parties continuing their dialogue and exchange of views in a spirit of good neighborly relations in order to resolve the matters pertaining to the landlocked status of Bolivia, a solution which both parties have acknowledged as a matter of mutual interest. With the determination of both parties, this could be achieved successfully through meaningful negotiations, end of quote. This court decision has not put an end to the dispute. Quite to the contrary, the court is explicit in recognizing that this dispute continues and does not close the possibilities for both states to try to find a solution. This is why the United Nations must monitor and demand the full enforcement of the decisions of the court so that both nations can continue negotiating in good faith to close the wounds of the past that are still open. It is possible to promote a spirit of good neighborly relations and open a new chapter in our relationship in order to forge solutions that are mutually acceptable and lasting. Brothers and sisters, our countries confront situations that are very different and challenging, and that they should be tackled in a sovereign way, and that we should find solutions through dialogue and negotiation for the benefit and for the interests of our peoples. Bolivia, in accordance with the resolutions of the United Nations, would like to reiterate its rejection of the economic and financial blockade that has been imposed against Cuba, which is an assault on all human rights. Finally, brothers and sisters, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all member states for their support for the various initiatives promoted by Bolivia, such as the International Year of Indigenous Languages, the Declaration of the Rights of Family Farmers, and the Declaration of the 21st of June as the International Day of Solstice. To conclude, we would like to restate our commitment to consolidate a new world order of peace with social justice, of well-being in harmony with Mother Earth, respecting the dignity and identity of all peoples. Thank you very much.
And now to discuss that speech we just heard, which was delivered by President Evo Morales of Bolivia to the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday, our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, comes to us from Managua, Nicaragua. Bolivia and Nicaragua have some very similar perspectives on things that are not shared by the U.S. government. He covers an awful lot of ground and talks about this new world, the multipolar world, and, you know, being more in harmony with the planet and the life on it.
Well, very much so. And because they're both members of the Bolivarian Alliance for the Americas, which is a bloc of countries that are overtly anti-imperialist in their positions on a whole range of issues in international affairs. And actually, I thought that Evo Morales' speech was somewhat lackluster in the sense that, and for example, he didn't mention Venezuela. He made a mention of the blockade against Cuba, for example.
Right.
But I didn't notice that he...
No, he did not. He didn't come out railing about... I mean, you know, Trump was there earlier today talking, and he spoke about Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, like as being the repository of all things evil and bad with, you know, the world. And I was also surprised he didn't try to slide Bolivia into that when he went on the attack this morning either. And I don't know, how do you read that? Because certainly the effort to remove Morales is an ongoing one. He's the only president in history, I think, who's had his airplane pulled over by the, you know, by the U.S. or its minions.
Right.
You know, then says, show a license and registration, please.
Well, right. Driving while indigenous.
Yeah, DWI, that's right. Flying while indigenous. So, you know, I mean, it's not like there's any great love for the entire chain of events that have taken place in what was once one of the most repressive right-wing corporate-controlled, you know, pieces of real estate on the planet for many years, is now one of the freest spaces in the world.
Yeah, and it is a puzzle why the United States is being relatively soft on Bolivia in some ways. Bolivia has been very outspoken against the United States in the region, and I think it expelled USAID some time ago. It expelled the Drugs Enforcement Agency some time ago. But you see, Evo Morales and his government team have been very astute, both on a domestic level and at a foreign affairs level. They've maintained very good relations, for example, with the right-wing government of Peru. They have very good relations with the right-wing government of Paraguay. Right. And so when Evo Morales makes this commitment or call for countries in the United Nations to adhere to the basic principles of the United Nations and the fundamental principles of its founding charter,
right.
Namely non-intervention, right. respect for national sovereignty, right. and so forth, that's one of the things that the ALBA countries are absolutely explicit about and very committed to. That so, for example, it would have been very easy for Evo Morales to mount an attack against Colombia, to mount an attack against Brazil, and for example, but because they have, the ALBA countries have, this commitment to the principle of non-intervention, they don't attempt to intervene in the internal affairs of their neighbors, including their right-wing neighbors.
Right, that's right.
There's no mention of what's going on in Argentina, for example.
Right.
And so what Evo Morales did was he stuck very, very in a very principled way to the overall international relations position of all the countries that make up the Bolivarian Alliance, right. Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Bolivia, and the Caribbean island nations as well,
right.
that are members of the alliance. They all maintain that point of view. So he made a very broad attack on capitalism, and showing how anti-democratic and it is, and how pernicious it is in its promotion of global inequality. He quoted the figures of what 3.8 million billion people have a tiny amount of the wealth, while 26 individuals have 80% of the wealth. I mean, those were the figures that he quoted.
Right, that's right.
And so his speech was very strong on a broad attack against the capitalist system that's destroying the planet.
Mentioning that it was destroying the planet is also, I think, a pretty strong part of an attack. Yes.
Yeah, and very relevant for him,
yep,
and,
for sure.
and for the region, yep. at a time when Bolivia's Amazon region has been affected very severely by extensive forest fires, just as Brazil's Amazon area has, and Paraguay as well.
Yeah.
But it's important for our listeners to understand that within the South American context, Bolivia it's a member of Mercosur. Okay, so it maintains good. One of the things that Evo Morales stressed was the massive economic and social advances that have taken place under his government,
right.
the government of the MAS party,
right.
Over the last 12, 13 years, and that too is a common characteristic of yep. The And Bolivia shares that characteristic with Nicaragua and shared that characteristic with Venezuela prior to the imposition of economic sanctions, right? Back in whenever it was, 2013, 2014.
Right.
Up until that time, Venezuela, too, had extremely successful social policies in terms of reducing poverty, in terms of extending education, extending healthcare, all those things that Evo Morales quite rightly stressed in a very assertive and proud way. That he has every reason to be proud of that. I mean, they wiped out illiteracy in Bolivia, you know,
in,
years ago, about 10 years ago, they wiped out illiteracy.
Yep.
And they've dramatically increased the prosperity of ordinary people in Bolivia, and they've done that, as Evo Morales said, by nationalizing their country's resources and by applying, although he didn't use the word, applying socialist policies in favor of the majority and not policies in favor of the local oligarchy. And that's one of the fundamental characteristics of Nicaragua as well. And so here in Nicaragua, why did you have that failed coup attempt last year in 2018? In many ways, it was because Nicaragua had been too successful and it couldn't be allowed to continue showing up the rest of the Central American countries for the basket cases that they are in so many ways, especially in social terms, right? And Bolivia has fulfills that function in South America. And if you compare Bolivia's progress over the last 12, 13 years with Chile or Peru or Argentina or Brazil, there's no comparison, or Paraguay. There's no comparison. They've been incredibly successful. And all the UN bodies and the World Bank and all these official bodies recognize that.
Right.
So I mean, it seems to me that what Evo Morales was doing was saying, look, domestically, we've applied these policies which have been incredibly successful. They're the opposite of, or they're diametrically opposed to corporate capitalism on a worldwide scale, but even so, we're the most successful country in our region. That's essentially what you're saying. That is what made his statement that the capitalist system is responsible for bringing the not just the region but the planet to the brink of environmental catastrophe. And so it was the contrast between the domestic achievements of Bolivia and the global failure of capitalism. It seemed to me that was the essential message of his speech.
Yep.
And would you agree?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, you mentioned literacy, for example, okay? According to the UN, to UNESCO, okay, there are three countries in Latin America that are free of illiteracy, and that means that they have less than 4%. And that is Cuba, Venezuela, and now Brazil. I mean, and now Bolivia. And they start in 2007, they launched the campaign using the Yes, I Can method that was developed by Cuba. It had reached more than 800,000 people as of the first sample that was taken in 2014, so 7 years later. And there was about 120,000 that we're going to graduate in 2014, and that put it under the 4% illiteracy rate. So, Bolivia, Cuba, Venezuela, free of illiteracy, and one wonders if Washington could make that claim.
I'm surprised they didn't mention Nicaragua, because the UNESCO has declared Nicaragua free of illiteracy, and they did so years ago. That doesn't matter. And in addition to that kind of social indicator, and something that is also characteristic of Nicaragua is Evo Morales's his recognition, his statement that Bolivia is one of the most gender equal countries in the world in terms of political representation, with over 50% women sitting in Bolivia's legislature, and that's also true in Nicaragua. So that's another characteristic of the ALBA countries.
Right.
And you can also see it. You can also see a similar level of women's participation in public life in Venezuela and, of course, in Cuba.
We're out of time. Thanks a lot. We'll speak with you next week.
Okay. Thanks a million, Don. Look forward to it.
Yep. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.